This is the Lubetkin on Communications podcast for Wednesday, November 16th, 2016. Welcome to the Lubetkin on Communications podcast. I'm Steve Lubetkin, your host, Podcast Steve on Twitter. In this program, we talk to people in the public relations, communications, and journalism fields about their activities. And we also present interesting seminar panels and conferences being conducted around the country. In this program, we present a conversation with Mickey Osterreicher. Mickey is the general counsel to the National Press Photographers Association. He's an award-winning photojournalist with more than 40 years of experience. His work has appeared in such publications as the New York Times, Newsweek, and USA Today. He's also experienced in contract, media, copyright, and First Amendment law. He's been actively involved in matters such as cameras in the courtroom, the federal shield law, media access, public photography, orphan works, and copyright infringement. I met Mickey this summer when he conducted a seminar on the rights of the public and photojournalists to document the activities of protesters and the police during the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. And we produced a podcast from that program. If you visit the show notes for this episode, you'll find a link to that program as well. Mickey joined us over Skype from his office in Buffalo, New York. Mickey Osterreicher, thanks for joining us on the Lubetkin on Communications podcast.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Now, we met this summer for the first time when you were conducting the panel discussion for the journalists covering the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. And we held a panel. We produced a podcast from it about how the press and the law enforcement officials were going to work together. And there was a great spirit of cooperation that emanated from the room, from the panelists. I wonder if you could take a look at how things feel now after the election and after so much has been said that's been negative about the press.
Well, I think it's two separate issues. I mean, when we were in Philadelphia and prior to that in Cleveland, I was doing training regarding the rights of citizens and journalists to photograph and record police performing their official duties in a public place. And I think the spirit of cooperation was really good in both cities. I think it carried over into the actual conventions in both cities because I was back there doing that. And, you know, that's completely, I think, separate and apart than another issue, which is, you know, somewhat related because it involves the press. And that is meaningful access to the President of the United States and by extension, his administration. And that's something that we were worried about 3 years ago in 2013. And when I say we, journalists, attorneys for the journalism groups, and we drafted a letter to then Press Secretary Jay Carney expressing our concerns. And our concerns very much had to do with the fact that, like all presidents, President Obama had a personal photographer, which is his every right, and pretty much almost all presidents have had personal photographers since there's been photography. The problem that we were having is that more than other administrations, we were seeing things that were closed to the press, and then immediately thereafter, images that were taken by the photographer or by the presidential photographer or the staff of White House photographers, ostensibly to memorialize and record his presidency, were then pushed out on either the whitehouse.gov or on Flickr and on social media. And we just thought that, you know, that was going to be a problem down the road. But right at that point, it was a problem for all of us.
Because you want the press wants to make its own photographs at events like this.
Yeah, and it's not so much that the press wants to make its own photographs. It's the fact that the public at large should understand how crucial a free and independent press is to government. I mean, we talk about the three branches of government, the executive branch, the legislative branch, the judicial branch. But the media, the press, has been called the fourth estate for a reason. It is also one of the checks on government that makes this democracy work. And the problem is when you don't have that check in place, when the government is handing out images, giving out press releases, that in other countries is called propaganda. And we pride ourselves in this country at not doing that. And yet, that is exactly what was happening. So it's not so much about the press wanting to be there as we are surrogates. Obviously, everybody can't be in the Oval Office. Everybody can't travel on Air Force One. But there should be independent coverage. And I say that not just, you know, theoretically, but the problem is if something were to happen that the White House didn't want the public to know about, it would be much easier to conceal that from the public if there was not an independent press there. Now, certainly there are certain things that are top secret, like when the president goes on a secret Thanksgiving Day trip to Afghanistan, you know, the press is taken along, at least it has in the past, and they don't reveal that they've gone there until they get to come back and the president's safe for safety reasons. So, you know, there's certainly exceptions to every rule. But generally, we want to be able to report about what the president does on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, if he's not feeling well, if, you know, it's the same thing as we want to know and report about pretty much everything that goes on in a free world.
What is it about the presidency that makes presidents become secretive about things, keeping things from the press, restricting press access to various activities?
Well, it's interesting that you pose the question that way, because I don't think it's just the president anymore. I think it's pretty much everyone who makes news now has also, you know, before somebody, we'll use the president as an example, did something and the press reported on it. And if the president wanted to get his message out, the way he would do that is through the press. Now, in terms of social media, the internet, so many other changes have come about that performers, entertainers, sports leagues, they also create news. But before, if there was going to be a concert picture, the only way that picture would get out there is if the press covered it. If there was a football game, the only way that that game would be viewed by the general public is through a licensing agreement with a network. And now we're seeing, you know, NFL.com, MLB.com. NHL.com. So they have their own vehicles in terms of bypassing the press. It's the same thing for individuals. If you took a picture of something newsworthy, the only way that image got out there is if a newspaper published it, or magazine, or some type of publication, or a television station or a network broadcast it. Not so much anymore. Now you can post it on Facebook or Twitter or all kinds of other social media sites. So this is an entirely new phenomenon, and we're all trying to come to grips with it. So the thing is, though, that the president and the Congress and the judiciary are all elected, well, except for the judiciary, by the people. And they're paid for with public funding, taxpayer dollars. So there's, you know, should be some accountability to the public for their actions. And if they are just trying to control their own message, it kind of takes out that accountability mode.
It's kind of interesting. You mentioned the entertainment and sports aspect of it. And a couple of years ago, I interviewed Jim Marshall, the legendary rock and roll photographer, shortly before he passed away. And in that conversation, he talked about how he really doesn't like going to rock concerts anymore because of the restrictions that are placed on photographers. You used to be able to wander around backstage, and I know this from my own experience covering rock and roll, wander around backstage, take whatever pictures you want, talk to whoever you want, and no longer. You get ushered in for two or three photos in the first song, and then you have to leave. And the same thing is almost happening with the political sphere. There's been restrictions from almost every administration, but we're seeing, particularly now in the wake of the presidential election, an awful lot of negative commentary about the role of the press coming directly from the president-elect's transition team and his campaign before he was elected. And I'm wondering, you know, what your concerns are for how the press is going to be treated in a Trump administration.
I have grave concerns. And unfortunately, I think for the most part, the general public doesn't have those concerns. They don't understand or appreciate the nuances here of why an independent press is important to them, not to the press, but to the public. I think they unfortunately hold the press in greater contempt than, you know, crooked politicians or anybody else. We're pretty far down there on the ladder. And I don't think when the White House Correspondents Association issues the statement that it did when it was recently denied a pool access to travel with the president-elect when he went to meet with the president for the first time, that falls on deaf ears. The public doesn't care. The public doesn't care, it would appear, where they get their images from, where they get their news from. But I think they should care, because otherwise we're going to be more like Russia than we care to be. And rather than having a free and independent press, we're going to have something that's probably more akin to a ministry of information, where they just put out what they want out there, the images that they want out there, the information that they want out there. And that is really going to take a terrible toll eventually on a democracy, at least as we've known it.
Now, you've been in conversations with the leaders of many of the organizations that represent the press, the Society for Professional Journalists. You represent the National Press Photographers Association. What kinds of approaches are you discussing? What kinds of potential lines of conversation can take place to try to educate both the administration and the public about the value of what we do as working journalists?
I think just speaking out about it, showing examples. Back in 2013, again, it was a perfect example of this. Nancy Pelosi had asked all of the incoming women of Congress to pose for a picture on the steps of the Capitol. and they did. It was January. And a few of them didn't make it to that official picture. So they photoshopped them in. One of those was Representative Wasserman, just coincidentally, who was, you know, has been in the news during this whole campaign.
Debbie Wasserstein Schultz, who was the head of the Democratic National Committee for a while.
Correct. Fortunately, there were other photographers there from the New York Times and the Washington Post who took the picture. Well, Nancy Pelosi's office pushed this picture out, never said anything about photoshopping, never said anything about anything, and just put it out as if here they are. And, you know, we got wind of it. Both the White House News Photographers Association and the NPPA wrote a letter to her objecting to this. And she pretty much answered it as well. It was a true and accurate depiction. Well, it wasn't a true and accurate depiction. A true and accurate depiction is at that moment in time when you took the picture, were those people in the picture? I mean, pictures are used in courts all the time, for example, as evidence. And I realize this is an extreme, but, you know, God forbid one of those women had murdered their husband and then claimed, I couldn't possibly have done it. I was standing on the steps of the Capitol. So, I mean, we use that as an example of manipulated images, images that are not truthful. That's kind of the slippery slope that we can go down if there's not an independent press, at least in terms of images, that can verify things. I mean, one of the things that I grew up with was kind of these two statements. Seeing is believing, and don't believe everything you read. Meaning, you know, be critical of it, question it. But when you look at an image, it should be that that image is what it really was. And unfortunately, nowadays, with Photoshop, with other things, we are seeing far too many images that have been either manipulated or, again, just because, and the media only has itself to blame here because of these huge layoffs in newsrooms where we don't have editors that are vetting things. We're seeing images that come from one tragedy and being purported to come from something else. I know for myself, when those really compelling images came out of this Syrian child who had drowned and had washed ashore and was being carried while they were trying to flee, the refugees fleeing Syria. I mean, the first thing that came to my mind is this real? Is it staged? Is it from something else? And that's not, at least from the perspective of the National Press Photographers Association and other professional news organizations, that's not what we want people to think. You know, the first thing when they're looking at a picture is this fake or is it real? But we're seeing, just like we're seeing all these fake news sites, and people are more than happy to buy into. I mean, I guess the most recent one today was the fact that one of the highest rated Google sites is this fake news site that says that that Donald Trump had a greater popular vote than Hillary Clinton, which is just not true. But there are intelligent people, you know, people who are my friends on Facebook, who are doctors, you know, who are posting this stuff. And there's just, you know, that whole critical thinking is gone out the window. But It's in some ways, I believe it's the media's own fault, because in the public's perception, and I believe that a lot of that is true. Perception sometimes is more important than reality. The media, in many cases, is worried about ratings and page views more than they are in terms of objective and honest journalism, and that's unfortunate. And those are the kinds of things we need to put our own house in order before we then go out and literally demand that we have access to the president, the government, so on and so forth. Those are really important things.
So let me ask you this: what do journalists do? What's your advice for working journalists who are confronted with, you know, government officials, whether it's at the federal level or state and local level, when they're confronted with elected officials who don't want to convey information that they're, you know, should be required to convey, you know, information that is a matter of public record?
Well, that's something that we have to continue to be very vigilant about. You shouldn't just accept it. And the last thing you should do, and again, that's one of my concerns, is for all that I'm saying, if whether it was President Obama or President-elect Trump, starts giving these handout pictures, we really need to be vigilant against using them in order to have ratings, in order to, you know, think that we're staying on top of this. And we saw that. I mean, even after our letter to Jay Carney, our meeting with Jay Carney at the White House, the Dalai Lama, for example, came to visit the president. It was closed press. President's photographer shot the pictures. They pushed it out. And far too many media organizations use those images. You know, they certainly, for the most part, would not take a handout story and publish it verbatim. And we think it's really inappropriate to take handout pictures and then just use them, because pretty much you're undermining the whole point that we're trying to make here. But we're seeing it time and time again from mainstream media, not to mention that there are so many, you know, supposed new media outlets, alternative media outlets, that would have no compunction at all against using these images. So it's really going to be an uphill battle, and I'm not confident that we will be able to persevere and explain and convince the public why this is so important to them. Not to sound like we're this, privileged and petulant press who are kind of sucking our thumbs, complaining that we can't get access. It's not about us. It's about the public being informed.
Now, the new president, the president-elect, has appointed a fellow by the name of Steve Bannon to be a senior White House advisor. Bannon has been in the past the head of Breitbart.com, which is a right-wing conservative news site, which has published some articles with really inflammatory headlines. There's some evidence that Mr. Bannon holds some of these far-right views, many of which are could be regarded as racist views. Does that concern you about the White House and about the message that's being sent to the media about what values the new administration has?
I think that's a whole other discussion, and we can argue back and forth about that. But what does concern me about, for example, Breitbart, is that let's just say that all the mainstream media, you know, the CNNs and the NBCs and all the networks and the New York Times and the Washington Post all said, you know what, we're not going to publish these images, these handout images. You know, Breitbart is one of the examples I was kind of alluding to, that I don't think they'll have any compunction at all against taking images that are handouts and publishing them. And then, you know, once they get out there, they're out there. And as I said, I don't think, at least at the beginning, the public cares one way or the other where these images came from, where the video comes from, where the stills come from. But the real problem is they may not care now, but then if the government is trying to hide things from them, is not being transparent, is not being forthright, and the press is cut off from any kind of coverage because the public could have cared less, I think that's going to be really a problem for this country. And we've seen that in far too many other countries that we consider dictatorial and that we don't want to become, I would hope.
Well, Mickey, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and we obviously wish you good luck in the efforts to keep the First Amendment alive and keep responsible journalism alive.
Thank you so much. This has been great, and I really appreciate your questions and the opportunity to talk to you.
Thanks again. Mickey Osterreicher is the general counsel of the National Press Photographers Association, and he's an award-winning photojournalist with more than 40 years of experience. He joined us by Skype from his office in Buffalo, New York. That'll wrap things up for this edition of the Lou Betkin on Communications podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you have comments or suggestions, please write to me. The email address is steve@beingthemedia.com. I'd also like to remind you about my book with Donna Papacosta from Toronto, Canada. It's called The Business of Podcasting, How to Take Your Podcasting Passion from the Personal to the Professional. It's available on the Amazon Kindle and in trade paperback. More information at thebusinessofpodcasting.com. And, of course, we produce these programs in the studios of our own professional podcasts, a division of the Lubetkin Media Companies, right here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And it's all on the web at beingthemedia.com. For everyone here at the Lubetkin Media Companies and Mickey Osterreicher, our guest from the NPPA, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.